This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Jack Tomkinson, Executive Director of the Seattle nonprofit Urban Sparks. Jack Tomkinson is here today to tell us about the work of Urban Sparks to facilitate the creation and improvement of public spaces and to inspire and educate the public in the initiation and accomplishment of similar community projects. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you.
Why was Urban Sparks started?
We started because I had started a personal park project, which turned out to be very difficult and involved lots of people helping. And after a while, after making phone call after phone call and getting help from all kinds of people, I realized how many people out there had knowledge but were probably never going to share it. Basically, project teams were dying in the harness. And I thought, wow, more people would do this kind of the work if they'd ever met anyone who had done it and had any idea where to begin. So we started collecting lessons, and we actually started Urban Sparks so that we could share those kinds of lessons with new people who wanted to do new projects.
Would you tell us about the development of Fremont Park, which was the beginning of Urban Sparks?
Sure. There was a property. It was up the hill from where I live. I used to joke about how the property values drop on the way down to my house. And it had a stunning view. If you moved here from Monaco, that's where you'd want to live. So it had three houses on it. They were being sold as a group. And I stumbled across a property and got the idea that it should be a park. Started making phone calls. And 7 years and $2 million later, there's a park up there that opened in 2007. So it was just a huge community effort. And in learning everything we learned, I thought, wow, this stuff shouldn't be lost each time a project is finished.
What led to your personal interest in public spaces?
Enjoying the ones that I had seen. That particular one, I had been traveling. And when I was in other countries and didn't speak the language, those viewpoints were so important to appreciating a city and seeing how things were laid out and how different cultures develop their surroundings. And Fremont Peak Park has a view of Ballard, all of it, and including all the Olympics and Rainier and the downtown buildings and the waterway with the drawbridge in Ballard. So it was a panoramic site, would be world class if we could pull it off.
Would you elaborate on the mission of Urban Sparks?
Sure. We exist to help people do community work and charitable work. And the idea is that lots of people would do it if they knew where to begin, if they had the guts to try it. And so we're about holding hands and telling people how to get started and hooking them up with other people who've done it before or sources of money sometimes. And then also we act as fiscal sponsor, which is a money tool that allows an organization to act like a nonprofit without being a nonprofit. They can become a project of our nonprofit. And that allows them to take charitable donations, grant money, tax-deductible donations to do their project.
What are some examples of the projects that you have helped?
Shortly after we started, we got involved in a mountain bike park that is underneath Interstate 5 in the middle of Seattle. And it was a project that was on land that was largely discarded. It's protected by the freeway, so it stays dry. But it's also acres of land. We ended up being part of a two-acre development and put about 0.7 acres of mountain bike trail underneath there. And then we've been involved in a couple other bike trails, a pea patch, which is a public garden, and fiscal sponsor for planning projects for various parks and other trail projects around the city.
Who has been involved in the projects you have supported? What kind of people?
Usually professionals who are pretty high energy. So they do their own job. Sometimes they're retired. Sometimes there's more than one income in the household so that people have time. But there are people with a vision of a nice place to live. Actually, sort of a mantra for us when we got started was, what if the city was a place that you didn't feel like you had to leave for the weekend? Instead of saying, oh, I got to get out of town for the weekend, what if your city was actually attractive? So the people we help are the people who in fact want to make their local surroundings attractive and enjoyable.
Have the projects you've supported been in any particular part of the city or all over?
Pretty much all over. Been out at Magnuson Park, which is a few miles north of downtown, and down in Beacon Hill, which is a few miles south of downtown, West Seattle, which is west of downtown several miles. So all around central Seattle.
Would you say more about if someone has a good idea, how you can help? What resources do you offer? If someone comes to you and says, here's my idea, then how do you proceed?
To a large extent, we help people block out what it is they're trying to do, what the major elements are. And that's people, property, permission, money. You know, what is it you're trying to do? And are the people who own the land that you want to do it on willing to have you do that? Do you need big money, small money? How do you plan on getting it? And that's where we can help a lot by talking about prior projects and making introductions. There's county money, city money, sometimes state money, lots of private money, foundation money that can be put together depending on how big the project is.
What are some of your favorite success stories?
Fremont Peak Park is certainly one. The Colonnade, which is the mountain bike park underneath the freeway, was a huge coup. It turns out it's being revisited because the design wasn't followed through on completely. It had a lot of cooks, and now we've learned from 10 years. We're not involved anymore. We actually stepped out once the development started, but we're still very friendly with the mountain bike organization and are in the know on it. But that's a project that is an extraordinary opportunity to have a mountain bike park rain-free in Seattle so that you can ride all winter long. That's a real coup because it's protected from the rain. There's also a pea patch, which is a beautiful pea patch with 17 plots. That was a clever project. It turns out it was a house for sale, essentially lost. But we had a donor who's been faithful on other projects, and he said, you know, my wife and I were looking for something to do. Why don't we buy that property? So we helped negotiate the purchase of a house and the adjoining property and separated them then and got the pea patch started.
And where is that pea patch located?
It's in Fremont, which is north of Seattle, at 42nd and Baker.
Any other favorite success stories?
Actually, we're really pleased to be involved in the Greenway movement. We were the first fiscal sponsor for the first project that actually needed a fiscal sponsor. And then we're also the fiscal sponsor for the one in Kirkland, which has been very successful and gotten to legislation over there. They have a Vision Zero policy in the transportation plan now. And that's Vision Zero is by 2035, having no major injuries for pedestrians and cyclists. So that's exciting to be able to support smart people who stay involved in politics and community organizing, getting families out, teaching them how to get to school together. It's a very important trail project.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jack Tomkinson, Executive Director of Urban Sparks, a nonprofit whose mission is to facilitate the creation and improvement of public spaces and to inspire and educate the public in the initiation and accomplishment of similar community projects. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. What are some of the roadblocks you have observed in regards to what prevents good ideas from being carried out?
Sometimes there's community opposition, and it can be daunting, especially if you think that you're doing a wonderful thing. You can't imagine anybody objecting to it. You find out that the cross-section of humanity has everybody in it. So it's really important to be able to understand when people oppose, but realize that for the greater good, it's smart to keep organizing and be able to try to address those problems. And sometimes they can't be addressed. Sometimes people have been laying in wait for an opportunity to make a stink, and they pick you. So getting around that can be just building more positive than there is a negative. And it's important to work hard at it because some people have a lot of energy for stopping things. It's where they feel most powerful. So you just kind of need to know that personality type is out there. They show up when you do public work.
Are there other roadblocks?
Big changes in expectations often happens when you're working with, say, a city department or a couple city departments where you have no idea what's going on internally, and all of a sudden you're made aware that the money stopped, or you no longer have permission, or the specification of the project doesn't include your piece of it anymore. And that's when it's really important to have allies in high places, and the higher the better. We actually coined the expression mid-level functionaries, and they can't necessarily solve a problem. They don't have the authority. So sometimes it's important to move up the chain of command, make sure that the understanding still exists, and say, then can you make sure it's going to happen? And that can be all the way up to the mayor, city council, director of a department. So it's really important to try to work with as high a people as you can when you're doing a project.
Could you give some examples from your projects of what you've done to overcome the roadblocks and finding the best leverage points to overcome those roadblocks?
Sure. I-5 Colonnade is a mountain bike park, which I mentioned. And there was a point at which we were no longer in the list of priorities that was describing the project. And that was when we were moving out of the scoping phase and into a planning phase. And we had put together a coalition of all the bicycle groups in Seattle and attended meetings and organized. And all of a sudden, we just weren't on the list of priorities. So we wrote a fairly powerful letter directly to the superintendent of parks. 2 weeks later, we got a very polite letter back that listed all of the reasons why they wanted us involved, the specific number of meetings we'd been to, and that they were committing $37,500 to our portion of the project. So again, it was actually kind of a mid-level functionary who just didn't put us on the list, even though several people higher up the chain of command were excited about us being there. But you can get forgotten. Unfortunately, the squeaky wheel really does get the grease, so you have to stay involved and monitor all the various aspects of the project and make sure they're still moving properly.
Any additional roadblocks?
You know, Fremont Peak Park, which is where we started before Urban Sparks really existed. We were born out of Fremont Peak Park. That was a huge, difficult project because it had houses on it, and the city would have to own those houses while the development was happening, and people were afraid of empty houses, so all kinds of difficulties. But we actually wanted to keep people renting those houses so that they weren't vacant, so that they didn't become blight during the project. And the city does not like being a landlord. It's just not what they do. But we talked the city into doing that. And that involved Donald Harris, who is retiring this month, has been fantastic for so many projects. And he asked the superintendent to let us keep our renters, which we did, worked out great. And almost as soon as it was time to have them move out, a squatter started a fire in the living room of one of the houses. And thankfully didn't burn the house down or the trees. But it's a kind of situation that you really have to monitor and stay on top of. Another aspect of that project was that there were three properties, one of which we chose not to buy right away so that the seller could reestablish his primary residence. And during the process, when our initial buyer turned the properties over to the city, the option to buy the third house was not purchased. It was $1,000 and it just didn't get purchased. Well, I had a hissy fit and was told, you know, you worry too much. In the end, the guy selling the house died before we bought it, and we were, in fact, in that very bad spot. But luckily, again, Donald Harris let me negotiate the purchase of that last house, so we were able to carry on.
Well, you've been alluding to this, really, but what has overall been your approach to helping projects move forward?
Mostly help people think through their options. It's really difficult when you're passionate about a project and you're trying to make it happen, you have an idea, and the most unimaginable thing happens that gets in your way, and people then revert to whatever problem-solving techniques they have, usually about five at a time, and it can get very scattered. So a lot of what we do is handhold and say, okay, what's working? What exactly is wrong? Who's involved in that thing that's wrong? Can you get to them? Can you get to a superior? Can you get to a friend? Can you get to an important character in the neighborhood who can make a difference? Landowners can be really powerful. There's lots of people who are key to the functioning of a neighborhood. And if you can figure out who those people are, sometimes you can get a friendly phone call made, a letter written. So to a large extent, we just help people regroup, rethink, and calm down. Because what happens is somebody whose job it is to do public work, say they work at the Department of Neighborhoods or the Parks Department, they have a job and they leave it every day. And the people running projects typically don't leave their projects ever until they're done. So they'll stay up all night trying to figure out, how in the heck do I get over this roadblock? Thinking they're not going to be allowed to. And so one of the things we do is give people the confidence to challenge something that doesn't make sense. Just tell them, you're right, that doesn't make sense. Let's see if we can fix it.
Would you tell us about Service House?
I'd be happy to. So Service House is a living learning center for full-time volunteers like AmeriCorps. And if you look at most volunteer programs, they are actually AmeriCorps members. And it's a living learning center where the community of workers can come back and sleep at night in the same place. So it's mini studios, 150 of them, with a auditorium where there can be lectures. And the idea is that these people who serve as full-time volunteers are extraordinary people who have given a year away. And what we're doing is we're creating a place where they can be in community and learn from the elders in the philanthropic community so that their year is enriched and they really think seriously about what their other options will be after their year of service and how they might stay involved in philanthropy, either as donors or large philanthropists, nonprofit managers, direct service, even civil servants. A lot of elected officials were actually in AmeriCorps, which has been running for some 20 years. So there's time for those people to have shown up in high places.
To what extent have service houses been set up?
So there are none today. On our website, we have a description of what a service house is. And the plan is to go nationally because both the last two national directors of AmeriCorps have said, absolutely, this will work in every city. Every city has the problem where the AmeriCorps workers come in on a stipend of $1,000 a month, and they're expected to live someplace in a metropolitan city. So it's a serious problem, and it takes some of our best minds, some of the best young people, and puts them under duress while they're solving very important problems.
Would you elaborate on what you hope will be accomplished by Service House?
So there are people who, usually after graduation from college, 22 years old, give a year away for service, and they work in one nonprofit and have one experience. The idea behind Service House is that they'll end up living in community with the other 450 people in North Seattle who are AmeriCorps and learn what's going on at all the different nonprofits. And then also, since they are returning to the same home each night, we can have a speaker series. So we can have philanthropists, nonprofit managers, politicians come talk to these people about all the different ways you can serve. So we plan on having people from projects even around the world pass through and talk about work being done anywhere that is the kind of work that an AmeriCorps person might aspire to one day.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jack Tomkinson, Executive Director of Urban Sparks, a nonprofit whose mission is to facilitate the creation and improvement of public spaces and to inspire and educate the public in the initiation and accomplishment of similar community projects. In what ways do you feel that Urban Sparks has most made a difference?
Most made a difference. I think that we've helped people be successful, and also we've spread the word. It turns out that by word of mouth, people will call us and ask about projects. Sometimes we do business with them, sometimes we don't. But I actually have 80 directories of projects that we've been involved in. We've been financially involved in 37 of them, done 16 neighborhood matching fund grants. So it turns out that we've been able to share a lot of information and help the network of leaders stay healthy. So I think we've helped people not give up, follow through on projects.
What seems most to inspire people to volunteer for projects in your experience?
I think they typically come from families and communities where that was normal. It's fun to ask who first inspired you, and very often it's a grandparent or a parent or maybe somebody in the community who always got involved in things. And it turns out that once you have volunteered, you'll find out the other people in those realms are extraordinary, positive, forward-looking people. So it's a great community. I mean, it's an amazing pleasure to work with the kinds of people who do volunteer. So it's nice to be able to just introduce people to other volunteers who have done similar work. And it's very inspirational to talk to people who've done it before.
Are there additional projects that Urban Sparks has been involved in that you would like to mention?
Yes, we have a dream project, which is aerial gondolas, which would basically be like a ski resort gondola lift that would go to each of the tops of each of the hills in Seattle, so that from there you can walk downhill, bike downhill, skateboard downhill to whatever your destination is. And that would really help a hilly city become a human-powered city where you just don't use cars. You end up being able to coast most places because you were able to ride up the hill again, very much like a ski resort. Getting around town could be like skiing around a ski resort. So we have laid out a network of gondolas that reach out to the various hills in Seattle and cut each of the then remaining commutes down to something like a mile of downhill. Well, most people can go a mile downhill. So that would be very exciting. In Seattle, there's a big Ferris wheel down on the waterfront, and those compartments are exactly what would be hanging on cables and going to each of the hills. The great thing about those is that in a lift-type situation, those can leave every 15 seconds. So you never look at a schedule. You just walk to the corner, get on the next one, and end up at the top of a hill. So it could revolutionize public transportation.
Where would the funding come from and how much would it cost?
A single short line is in the realm of $20 to $30 million, which in public transportation is a very small amount of money.
And where would the funding come from?
That would likely be public. It would be public transportation money. So city, county, and actually Doppelmayr, who makes those lifts, has done it. In fact, I think they built the ones in Medellin, Colombia. Medellin built one for the poor side of the hill. And the rich people saw how easily the poor people got around after that was built and built several more in the next few years. So there are cities that use a lot of them. They're very, very effective, and particularly in hilly country, because the gondolas hang from a cable so they can go over everything, including the center of a right-of-way if you already have a street there, and just swoops people up and sets them on top of the hill. So it's a wonderful solution. Also, they're counterbalanced. They don't even take much energy because everyone that goes up is being counterbalanced by one going down. So they're extraordinarily efficient.
For Urban Sparks, what is your vision for the future?
We want to continue helping as many projects as we can, but also encouraging other organizations to do work like we do. Fiscal sponsorship is so important. A lot of people think as soon as they're going to do something charitable that they should start a 501c3. It's the holy grail. Well, it's also a way to kill your board. It's a way to destroy the enthusiasm for an organization because it's a lot of work. So fiscal sponsorship is really important, and we encourage other organizations to get good at it. We're going to stay good at it because it allows projects to have a finite term, act like a real nonprofit, and finish the project and close the doors and not have some big organization you still have to maintain.
Well, you mentioned Service House and also the gondolas, but what other kinds of projects do you hope to work on in the future?
Transportation's still huge. The Greenways is a wonderful movement. Again, so much of what we do is networking and idea generation. So we work with Cascade Bicycle Club. We're encouraging them because they have so much money to do some small projects. Just forget trying to get someone else to pay for it. Pay for it with club funds. Fix an intersection. And just show that it can be done so that perhaps transportation departments will say, gosh, that didn't look so difficult. And then getting each of the Greenways groups to work together, which they're doing beautifully now. The Neighborhood Greenways group is really doing well, and Kathy Tuttle's done a huge service to bring those people together. So we're all talking. The last transportation levy was passed with a lot of collaboration. So we'd still like to work on transportation. It's such an important part of keeping energy consumption low. In fact, the undriver license, which I guess I haven't mentioned, is a license that you get in exchange for a commitment not to drive as much. You don't have to ditch your car entirely, but you can just shop with a friend if you want, but to reduce trips. And it turns out that 52% of the energy that a household burns is transportation. So if you don't drive a car, and you walk or ride a bicycle or use public transportation, you can make a huge dent in that 50% of your energy use. So improving transportation in a city is huge to making it work better, which is obvious in large cities around the world.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Get involved in projects. You'll meet great people. You'll have something to be really proud of in your life besides just keeping the roof over your head. Getting involved with people who have a vision of really humane societies. A nice group of people to be involved with.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Jack.
Thank you, Diane.
You were just listening to Jack Tomkinson, Executive Director of Urban Sparks. For more information, check on the web at urbansparks.org. Again, that's urbansparks.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability Segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability Segment again next week on Listener Power at 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on kexp.org.